STS is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
FDE is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, Friday night edition of the show. Welcome to it, everybody. It is the 11th of February. And Diane, first of all, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm excited because we've got a really, really interesting show planned for everybody tonight. Right off the top, we're not gonna get into quick hitters. We're not gonna get into much of anything here until I introduce our special guest, and he is a special guest. Jake Danishevsky joins us for the entire show tonight. And Jake is a friend of mine from Facebook, but you know, we have taken that Facebook friendship quite a bit further than just Facebook. We've chatted and talked, and he's been a guest on our show before. And for those who don't remember, Jake was actually born in Kiev. He came to the United States at the ripe age of 13. He is an American citizen. And Jake, welcome to Right Side Patriots. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you, Craig, and thank you, Dan. Great to be here.
Glad to have you.
Thank you.
You know, a week ago, Diane and I co-wrote an article under the title, What Will Happen? An Educated Guess. We published it this past Monday, just a few days ago, and we talked about it on this show Tuesday night, but we wanted to have Jake come on and tell us whether or not he thinks, because he's from the region, he has friends, he has relatives that still live in those regions over there. Jake, did we come close on what we're talking about, or did we miss this thing by a mile?
You actually came very, very close, and you even made some points that I never thought of and nobody even talked about. So you both actually hit on some of the notes that nobody ever, ever talked about in any news media or in politics or anywhere else. And I can bring up specifically one of those points that very, very, very important to your listeners and what you made in this article.
Go ahead.
So the entire article is amazing. I liked it. I read it twice. I wanted to read it slowly to understand everything. You made valid points that Putin does not want to start a war. And the most interesting point in the article that I picked up on, and it's just purely amazing, that our military, or for the lack of a word, our administration, actually didn't say a single thing about those troops are not in any formation. I'm not a military person, so I do not see this. I do not understand it. I look at troops. I see 100,000 troops. I'm like, wow, that's a lot of troops. But at the same token, I'm like, Putin is not an idiot by far. And when you guys wrote an article and I read that they're not in any military formation, it made total sense to me. How does it not make sense to those so-called Pentagon officials that Biden administration put in place?
Right. Well, and that was an interesting thing when it was found out, because satellite images showed it, that these troops were just standing around. They might have, you know, had their weapons and everything, but they weren't doing anything. They weren't grouped like they were going to go in and start some kind of altercation. And to this date, not one Russian troop has set foot on Ukrainian soil.
Well, Diane, let me ask you this, because you were the one, as we were writing that article, that discovered that. You're the one that brought that up in the article. So let me ask you this. I mean, right now, the Biden regime is talking about an invasion of Russia into Ukraine is imminent, could happen in the next 24 to 48 hours, right?
Okay.
And yet we've seen updated surveillance photographs. We're flying drones at about 57, 58,000 feet, and we're taking pictures. We got new updated pictures that were released earlier today. Do you see anything in those photos, as opposed to a week or a week and a half ago, that makes it look like they're in any kind of battle formation?
First of all, absolutely not. Second of all, Biden is lying. There's not going to be any imminent invasion of Ukraine. Right before we got on air, I got some information directly from Ukraine. And what it was that German, Russian, Ukrainian, and French representatives have agreed to meet again in March after the, you know, counted upon talks in Berlin didn't go anywhere. Now, both the French and German negotiators just told this to the AP, the AFP, and Biden is saying nothing. In other words, Russia, Ukraine are meeting in March to continue to try to settle this diplomatically. And yet Biden is screaming the invasion is happening. The invasion's going to happen. It might even happen during the Olympics and all sorts of nonsense. When here it is, directly from Ukraine, I'm looking right at it now. I'm looking directly at the satellite pictures. There's no battle formation. And now more and more diplomats from the area are saying another meeting's going to be in March.
Jake, let me ask you a question. You know, when we hear from the Russian diplomats that there's not going to be an invasion, there was never going to be an invasion, how much stock can we put in what we hear from the Russian diplomats?
Well, that's a great question, Greg. It depends, because see, they also have their own agenda. So nobody's without the agenda. Can we put stock into it? Sure. We can always listen and say, you know, they might be telling the truth. Might be is the key word, because they're also playing those war games, so to speak. So they're also playing mind games. For example, when Putin says something, a while back I listened to a professor who was actually Obama supporter twice. He voted for Obama twice. And he was an expert on Russian studies. He was an expert on Russia, Russian military, Russian politics. He was a NYU professor, if I'm not mistaken. And he made a valid point. We don't have somebody in the White House. That's during the Obama. And Obama, I think, was a little better than what we have now. We don't have somebody in the White House who could deal with Putin. Putin is a seasoned military guy, seasoned KGB guy, seasoned politician. He's not somebody you want to give a stick to. He will break your stick. And you give him an inch, he'll take a foot. So if he says we're not going to invade, he might be telling the truth, but he wants something in return for that truth. He wants something else. And that else, most likely, Biden knows what it is. He probably does know what it is.
Well, don't you think, Jake, that the biggest part of that, whatever it is he wants, is for Ukraine never to be allowed to join NATO?
Yes, yes. That's one part. Another part, I have this, this is just my personal observation, and this is nothing new to anybody, but Ukraine has a lot on Biden also. And his family, his crime family, I would say. And Ukraine being under somebody's foot would actually benefit Biden, would benefit not just him, but many, many others in Washington. I have a feeling there's deals that are being made as we're talking right now. I have this feeling that Putin right now is saying those words so those deals are made in his favor, but also in Biden's favor. Because if Biden says minor incursion into Ukraine, what is he telegraphing to Putin and other Russians?
Exactly. Well, here's something interesting also with Biden. It almost seems like he is trying to start World War III.
No doubt. No doubt. For what it is, they're trying to destroy the United States because we're a stronghold of freedom. That's basically, and I know a lot of people don't agree with that, but I still believe America is truly the only nation in the world that's unique and that's, I mean, used to be free.
Right.
It hurts me to say that. Yeah.
And what he's also not saying is right now, there was a U.S. State Department document that was given to the Kiev Post, the leading newspaper, that we will be evacuating all American staff members from OSCE Special Monitoring Mission in Ukraine, which they call the SMM, and that they have to be ready to leave Ukraine by next Tuesday, which is the 15th. But this is ridiculous. They have to get out on their own by bus, by car, by train. I mean,
here's something even more ridiculous, Diane. My wife made a really good point when they first said that. She goes, wait a second. They're evacuating from Ukraine where we can actually have diplomacy, but they never evacuated from Afghanistan. How does it even make sense?
I know. Right. Isn't that bizarre?
It is bizarre. It is bizarre because in Ukraine and Russia, we have some diplomacy. We had none in Afghanistan. Zero.
Right. And it seems Biden is pushing for a war.
He is. He's pushing for chaos because basically they're trying to create chaos and then pretend that they put it out. Like they put out a fire like Soviet government used to do that, actually. They used to create a chaos and they say, look how great we fixed it.
Well,
the ones who broke it.
that comes from Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. You create a crisis, and then you solve the crisis you created and take the credit for ending the crisis. You know,
never let a good crisis go to waste.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, here's part of the deal, too. You know, Biden is desperate, and this is, you know, part of the article that Diane and I wrote. Biden is desperate. He wants to be the person who says, I faced down Vladimir Putin, and Putin blinked.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. He wants to telegraph that as his action, but in reality, Putin is controlling all the cards here. And Biden knows it. Biden knows he doesn't have a backbone to even talk to him. He pretends... Mm-hmm. They use big words, but there's no gestures. There's no gestures that Putin understands. See, Putin is a man's man. And I know a lot of people say male toxicology, all this other things. But in reality, Putin grew up in the ranks doing things that he had to do, whatever it is. Like people grow up in the mafia ranks. It was even worse. And Biden pretends that he can somehow talk to Putin with tough words. Putin doesn't care. He laughs at him. It's laughable.
It's amazing when you think about it, Diane. I mean, you look at the situation. You got Vladimir Putin on one side of this thing. It's really a triangle. You got Putin on one corner. You've got Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, on one corner. And you got Biden on one corner. Biden is pressing the panic button. Zelensky is saying, everybody relax, and Putin is getting the last laugh.
Yes.
True.
Putin is going to be the winner in this in the end, just because the one that's supposed to be looking out for our interests is doing everything to get us involved when we shouldn't be involved, because these countries, Russia and Ukraine, along with France and Germany, are trying to work out an agreement somehow. And basically what it is for Putin to get political control, more political control in Russia. He's not interested in killing Ukrainians.
No, absolutely not. I mean, in reality, if you look at it, I mean, and if you look at the entire picture, Ukrainians, Russians, and at this point, especially after Soviet Union, it's pretty much the same people, except for, you know, a few nationalists here and there. You got marriages between Ukrainians, Russians, and other republics that were part of Soviet Union. Right. So now they're different countries, but they have singers, actors, and everybody intermixed. They have people intermixed. It's a hot pot of different cultures. Even though it's Ukraine, there's Russians who are living in Ukraine and vice versa, whether it's for work or for marriage or whatever reason. So you're literally having something that we had as a civil war here, that brother will fight against brother. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that there. I don't think they do.
I don't think they do either. Putin is far from a stupid man. He's very intelligent. And he knows if there's a major war, somebody like Biden, who's not of clear mind, can very easily press his finger on the nuclear button. Well, and, you know, people might laugh at that, but when you're dealing with someone that's not all there, someone who will do anything to save basically his political career and political reputation because his numbers are tanking, you don't know to what degree he will go.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I was concerned when I can't even call it election, when he took the White House, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was concerned that this is the guy who's going to be a hard breath away from nuclear codes.
Right.
I was very concerned about that. I mean, yes, there are many people said, oh, they're going to start a war. Nobody truly wants to start a war. But when you have an incoherent guy who can't even make sense out of simple things, I don't even know, like, what lens he will go to do something silly.
Well, it does make you wonder. Now, you know, folks, if you missed the top of the show, let me just tell you that we're speaking here tonight with Jake Danishevsky. He's Ukrainian-born, but a proud and rock-solid American patriot. He's been living in this country now for 43 years. And, Jake, you've got friends, you've got family, some in Kiev, some in Moscow. Have you heard from them? And if you have, what are they telling you? What is their feeling about what's going on right now between Russia and Ukraine? Are they fearing a war? Do they think it's something that's building up? Or do they think that this is just Putin flexing his muscle and a war game?
This is just through a grapevine, because I haven't talked to some of the friends or relatives about this for a while. I mean, who are there? But I have a few aunts, and one lives in Kiev, one lives in Moscow, actually. It's very interesting. So last time when Putin went to Crimea, when Russia went to Crimea, the aunt from Kiev, from Ukraine, actually stayed with the one in Moscow because she just wanted to be safe. So I said, why don't you just stay there? And she said, well, I still have my apartment in Kiev. And she bought that apartment. And it's not very easy, I guess, especially for a retired age person to buy an apartment, you know, in the former Soviet Union republics. So it was very tough for her to just say goodbye to that and leave. So right now, I mean, I'm sure people are concerned. I mean, I'm sure people who live there are concerned. But I don't see such concern where people actually are screaming bloody murder and saying that something terrible is about to happen. I even have friends who are going on business to Ukraine. I have a friend who was about to go on business to Ukraine, and he was not too concerned. So it's a lot that's going on that we don't know. And I guess on the ground, things are not as worried as it seems to be.
Jake, do you think, a quick follow-up on this, do you think that people are more concerned about Biden and the U.S. potentially sticking their nose into this business than they are about what Putin's doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That disaster of a press conference that he had, it was, I mean, it was embarrassing to say the least. I mean, I'm an American, so when Russia or Ukraine do something stupid, I laugh at it because I'm not Russian, I'm not Ukrainian. First of all, I'm a Soviet-born Jew, born in Ukraine. Neither one of them wanted me there, nor wanted my family there, so we left. We left. It wasn't as easy as just living in the country as people think in America, because when you tell people in America, American-born people, we had to literally pick up whatever we had, pay for our citizenship of Soviet society to be given away. We couldn't live until we paid for it, and then we had to come here. So I'm an American, so I'm concerned about this country. I mean, a lot of people are screaming, oh my God, Ukraine, Russia. I'm concerned about this country. And this country right now is in terrible shape. And Biden, he's not going to make it any better. He's not going to make it any better at all. He's a failed vice president, failed president. I don't even know what next 2 years will bring us.
I don't think any of us know.
Yeah. It's a luck of the draw, and hopefully he'll do nothing and we'll be okay.
Yeah, but the one thing everybody, you know, has to remember, at least keep it in the back of your head, Biden is not the one really calling the shots. It's Obama.
Yeah. I mean, maybe there's a few players there, but yeah, definitely. He's definitely there. And even the fact that he telegraphed, well, I'm only going to be for one term. No kidding.
Right.
I mean, first of all, he's not making decisions. And he even said, they told me to say that. Remember in one of the speeches?
Oh, yeah.
Said, they told me to say that. Who are they exactly?
Obama.
he didn't misspeak. He actually told the truth. He actually told the truth a few times in his lifetime. This was one of them.
But that's by accident. I mean, his handlers, the puppet master, Obama, they would rather he not tell the truth.
Oh, of course not. Of course. Sometimes I honestly feel bad sometimes for Jen Psaki, because I don't even know how can you work for somebody like that. Somebody even made a joke. How do you do sign language for somebody like Biden?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, you think about the gibberish and the nonsense, and, you know, he trips all over his words. I mean, how would you possibly, not only sign language, let's say you're in charge of the closed caption thing on TV. How do you type that? How do you?
Right.
I don't know how that's done.
But yeah, Jen Psaki, she's not the brightest cookie. I mean, you listen to her, circle back. But then if you step back and you don't criticize her, you just say, who is she working for? You're like, wow, her job must be the toughest in the world.
Well, you know, I go back. Diane, you remember that photo on the day that Trump was being inaugurated and all those people from the Obama regime were lined up outside the White House frowning?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Jen Psaki's in that photo, and she's got about the most sour look on her face as anybody in there.
Interesting.
Well, she's a diehard liberal. She's one of the sheeple.
Yeah.
She just spews what she's told to spew. And you can see that when a legitimate reporter asks her a question and all she gives back is the rhetoric.
Yeah.
There's no thought to an answer. There's no anything. It's just, this is what I have to say. This is what I'm going to say. And it's a joke. This whole administration is a joke, but the problem is it's a dangerous joke. Because Biden still has his finger on the nuclear button.
And unfortunately, the problem is all of this, everything is a problem. But the problem is the media. They make the news. They don't even report the news. They just make up the news.
Exactly.
I mean, if they truly reported it, because, for example, when Trump said, if you lie about, you know, what I said, if you lie in your... I'm going to take your press passes away. And they said, oh, my God, he's like Hitler. He's like Nazi. He's shutting media down. Now, Biden calls somebody son of a, you know what? I don't want to say on your show. He calls,
you can say anything you want
son
on
of
your,
a bitch.
On
he called the reporter son of a bitch. And they don't say anything. Media is quiet. He calls the reporter son of a bitch. He tells them to shut up. He tells them, I mean, during Obama, they sent FBI after reporters. I remember at least one case of the reporter being arrested. And nobody said he's like Hitler. Nobody even reported on that. Where's the truth here?
Well,
there is no truth.
You know, that brings up a good point, Jake. I mean, right now, I tend to trust Pravda more than I trust the New York Times.
Well, you know what Pravda means in Russian? It means the truth.
Right.
Well, here's something that's going to make both of you laugh. You know who's reporting more of the truth than the American papers? Al Jazeera.
Yeah. Yeah. Surprise. Shocking, right?
Yes.
Well, but
they
you look
lie more than anybody.
You look around the world, you look at different news outlets around the world. You know, right now, the headline in this country is Russia set to invade Ukraine. It's imminent, 48 hours. Everybody has to run for their lives, right?
Right.
But you look around the world, and everybody else is reporting that too, but they're reporting it as the U.S. says this. The U.S.
Right.
says, you know, BBC, they're not saying that Russia's about to invade Ukraine. Al Jazeera's not saying it, but what they are saying is America says Russia's about to invade Ukraine. So the only source that's really saying that is the Biden regime.
Yeah, and the media puppets.
It's very bad because not only is it setting a bad tone, What he's trying to do really is show up Putin, but he's failing miserably because we're becoming more and more of a laughing stock on the world stage every day.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And interesting because we've been saying that me and some of my friends, and I'm sure many other people, that if you look at what the media is reporting, you have to look at what there actually is going on in the background. If they're reporting so much, and oh my God, the war in Ukraine and Russia, what are we doing in Washington right now that they don't want us to see? This is the question that always arises. Because we always notice something's being reported about some huge scandal or something, and yet some bigger scandal that actually more relevant to us is happening in Washington at the moment.
Well, I mean, where do we start? Inflation, the southern border of the U.S., gas prices, Hunter Biden. I mean, where exactly do you start with that? Folks, look, we've hit the bottom of the hour here. That means we got to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we're going to continue this conversation with our good friend Jake Danishevsky regarding Russia, the Ukraine, and other things that kind of surround that. And I can tell you, Jake, one of the things I want to get into before we end the show in about 30 minutes, I want you to tell people a little bit about your story when you first came to the U.S.
Sounds good.
All right.
I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Folks, hang on. We'll be back with more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at The National Patriot, Diane Sori at The Patriot Factor, and our special guest tonight, Jake Danishevsky. He was born in the Ukraine, now a proud American citizen, and we're glad to have him because we're getting a lot of truth tonight about what's going on out there. Earlier this week, Diane and I on the show Tuesday night talked about our co-written article, What Will Happen? An Educated Guess. Jake, you seem to think we pretty much nailed it in that report.
I think so. I think you guys hit points that nobody else did. I mean, you actually put more than nails there.
Well, and as a Jewish, I don't know how you classified it, or Jewish Ukrainian Soviet-born Jew.
Yeah.
What about, you know, in the article, there's a section in there on how the Middle East plays into all that. How did that read to you? I mean, did that seem like it was pretty much on point too?
Interesting point, exactly. I remember during Trump administration where Trump made peace with many nations in the Middle East, and Israel was part of those peace treaties. Mm-hmm. And an interesting point that I was kind of like looking at back then, that Trump was meeting with Netanyahu and Putin. So three of them, it was like a triangle. And I remember you writing an article at that time that also struck a very interesting note, that the triangle that they were building was actually a very important triangle because you got superpowers. And Israel, even though it doesn't consider on the world stage as a superpower, it truly is. So they were building this peace treaty between the three nations. So Putin does want to stay in the Middle East and does want to be friends with Israel. So that point was amazing.
Well, Putin also, his ties with Israel also are economic ties, and that's something a lot of people don't realize. Putin gets a lot of medical technology from Israel. There is now a free flow of families going back and forth from Russia to Israel and back again. Putin knows Israel's strength. Putin knows that Israel has things that nobody else has, workable things like an EMP. But also, it's funny that you mention Israel now, because I also, besides the Ukraine, I'm also monitoring Israel. And it's very funny that right now, just a few minutes ago, in the Jerusalem Post is a new article, Russia now has enough forces for Ukraine invasion, says the White House.
See? There you go.
See? Not says Putin, not says Ukraine, not says Zelensky, but says the White House.
Well, not even says Israel. You know, Israel is reporting this whole uproar, this whole panic is coming from the White House.
Exactly.
Just like what they do here. They create some kind of a notion of a chaos, or they actually create a chaos themselves. And then they say, look, we fixed it. I mean, if you break every vase in the house and you fix one and you say you fixed something, a lot of people look at it and go, oh, well, he did something, but he's the one who broke it.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And what's very funny about all this, in this article, the reporter is like pressing, well, give us your evidence that this is happening.
Right.
And there's
right.
nothing. They're actually saying there is no specific evidence, but the Americans better leave because Putin's going to strike before the end of the Olympics. Come right. on, what? Folks. Can't you see this is divert and deflect in action? Well, this keeps the American public off what's happening in this country.
Diana, the very beginning of the show tonight, you talked about the fact that there's going to be some high-level meetings in March, okay? And then you've also got to take into account, and I meant to throw this in earlier, but it just came back into my head. You know how things kind of go around, come around when you're doing live radio. The Soviet Union, not Soviet Union, but I mean Russia, their military generals, they're still saying that the current war games are set to end on the 20th of this month.
Right. Yeah, isn't that a coincidence? Yeah.
Well, I mean, so is it a war game? I mean, Jake, before we get into your story about coming to America, what is your gut impression? Is Putin going to invade or is he not?
No, I don't think so. My gut tells me the same thing that you guys wrote in your article. It's not. So basically, this is how I looked at the whole situation back with Crimea and through this whole process. Putin wants the resources back. He doesn't want Soviet Union back. He wants those republics, so to speak, those countries, those sovereign nations now, to play ball with Russia. He wants resources, he wants borders, strategic borders. He wants all of that, but he doesn't want to create Soviet Union. He doesn't want communism. He's an opportunist. He likes it. And it seems like, I mean, if I'm reading him correctly, it seems like he just doesn't want, like you mentioned earlier today, that he doesn't want Ukraine to join NATO. That will not benefit him.
Right. Right. But also there is something else that Putin wants, and this was touched upon in our article as well. Ukraine has certain natural resources that would be advantageous for Russia to have.
Exactly. Exactly. Ukraine is rich with a lot of things, and those resources are very important. I always said that, and people said to me, what resources does Ukraine have except bread fields? Which is also important. It has beautiful soil, but it's got magnesium, like you mentioned, and many other things that Russia could use. Not to mention, I think in the article you mentioned strategic borders. There's also Black Sea. Ukraine has Black Sea.
Right.
It's a very important port. So there's a lot of resources that Putin could use and he would like to use, and he wants them to be friendly to him, or not even friendly, to listen to him when he says, I want to do this or that.
Mm-hmm. And it's the port that he wants on the Black Sea is kind of like the port of Tarsus that he wants from Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, there's not a lot of difference between the two. And he can, you know, if he can't get the port from Syria, he can still do the same things from the port in the Ukraine.
Exactly.
Black Sea, yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing, I think it's also in the article, if I recall correctly, you said that there's a lot of Russians in Ukraine who would like Ukrainian government to be Russia-friendly. It would benefit them as well. And I mean, that in itself is a very valid point, because I could not tell you how many Russians are in Ukraine, but the number is probably very huge. Because like I said, when I lived in Ukraine, when I was born and lived in Ukraine, I pretty much spoke Russian all the time, except for in school, or a few people would speak Ukrainian here and there, but mostly we spoke Russian. So there's a lot of Russian speaking, a lot of Russian, not just Ukrainian Russian, they're Russian people who live there.
Mm-hmm. Jake, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you see any possibility that there could be a coalition government in Ukraine?
Meaning coalition as opposed to what they have now, a coalition with Russia?
Yeah, a true coalition between the ethnic Ukrainians and the Russians. Could they actually form a workable coalition together?
Well, I mean, perfect example, Ukrainian president is Jewish right now. So, I mean, he's not Ukrainian. I mean, yes, you can say he's Ukrainian Jewish, but in reality, he's not Ukrainian. He's Jewish. It said Jewish in our passports, and I will touch on that when I talk about my story. It said Jewish in our passports. So Jewish was a nationality according to Ukrainians, Russians, and the former Soviet Union. So he's Jewish.
Okay, yeah, that's left over from from Hitler's Germany making Jews a nationality.
Yep.
But I'm talking about, forget the titles of who is what. Mm-hmm. Could the two factions actually work together?
I think they do right now. I think in Ukraine, I don't think there is any kind of tension, as opposed to if you're Russian, if you're Ukrainian, Lithuanian, or anybody else who like migrated and lives there at the moment. I mean, because like I said, people moved around, you know, whether it's for work or marriage or family or whatever. And, you know, I have a feeling that that's what they have now. The only thing they're not is they're keeping to their country and they're not being friendly to Russia the way Putin wants them to be friendly to him, to give him what he wants when he wants it.
Right. I mean, this thing has all the earmarks of being political, but not necessarily mm-hmm. military.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Just like we sometimes strike a diplomacy in some nation because we want something from them.
Right.
So whether we give them something under the table, perfect example, the missile crisis in Cuba, we did something in Turkey. We shook hands with Russia. We told them we want to save our face. And in reality, there was no war.
Right.
It's the same idea. Putin will maybe make a bad deal. They will shake on it. Maybe there's money will be changing hands. But in the end, everybody will get what they want one way or another. One party will get more. One party will get less. But I doubt anybody wants military because even Russians, they respect Putin. They like Putin, but nobody wants a war. Nobody wants their sons, daughters to end up in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the only one who seems to want a war is the White House.
And look, I'll be honest. I'm not even sure the White House wants a war. What they want is for everybody to think there's going to be a war so that then when there's not, Biden can step up and say, see, I stopped it.
I dissolved.
Yeah, like anyone's going to believe that.
Well, he'll believe it.
And no, there are people that believe anything. I mean, Biden comes out, he doesn't say that. They go, did you hear his speech? I go, seriously, that was a speech?
Well, yeah. But I mean, and Diane, let's be honest here. Whoever's left at CNN, they'll believe it.
Whoever's left. And so will Whoopi Goldberg and those on the View.
They'll believe it. You know?
Yeah.
Jake Danishevsky is our special guest tonight. Jake, you came to this country in 1979. You were 13 years old, and a few years ago you wrote a book about your life and about coming to America, and that book is on my bookshelf behind me. And in that, you tell some just amazing stories about when you first came here. You're 13 years old. One of the stories that really hit me hard was the story, your first day, maybe it was the second day, that you and your family were in the U.S. You and your father went to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
tell a little bit of that story, because this is amazing.
So this is interesting because that story just like it was phenomenal because we came from Soviet Union where there's lines for anything. If there's nothing in the store, there are still lines because people are hoping to get something. And we sometimes had to wait in line for hours just to get to be told that there's not enough products left. So lines are, you know, very kind of, you know, important to Russian people because there's something in the store if there's a line. So we come to America and we go to, I believe it was Stop and Shop at the time. We were placed in this local hotel just for a month until my parents find a job, find a place to live. And we were assisted by a Jewish organization. But me and my dad go to get a few groceries. And that scene, later on, I watched Moscow on the Hudson. And that scene reminds me, or Moscow on the Hudson actually reminds me of my story, where he looks at the coffee. And right. We go to the store and we see all this shelves of products. You want this, you got 20 different things. You want another item, you got 50 different things. So we pick up a few items, you know, bologna, bread, you know, items that, you know, we wanted to get. And we come up to the cashier. And the cashier is waving to us. And there's no line. So, you know, we've been already through Austria, Italy, on the way to America. But we still kind of figured they must be on the break because there's nobody there. Not a single person, just us. And she waves to us, and we're like, what did we do? Because we didn't speak English. She waves to us a little more. And me and my dad are like, did we do something wrong? Are we supposed to? So we come up, she grabs one of the items, and she starts, you know, putting the prices through. And at the moment, we had this, like, like a sigh of relief. Like, phew,
well, we because
we're going to buy this product.
where you came from, if somebody was waving you over that way, it was usually because they were upset with you for something.
Right. Or there's no line. That means, what are we doing? They're on the lunch break or whatever. So we didn't know what to make of it. So we thought we already caused some trouble and she might kick us out of the store or something. We had no idea where this is going.
Well, and, you know, in the book, you talked about after she got done and you paid for the groceries, she told you something that absolutely stunned you guys. You just didn't expect it.
She thanked us for coming there. She thanked us. I mean, in Russia, you thank them that they actually let you get product with your own money, and they actually gave it to you. It's a complete. I mean, it's hard to believe that something like this actually happens. But she thanked us. We were astonished. Somebody thanked us for buying our own groceries.
Now, if you go to the grocery store today, does it remind you of the grocery stores in the Soviet Union when you were 12? Because there's nothing on the shelf?
Now I expect to see it. Actually, you want to hear something funny? When COVID broke out in 2020, March of 2020, I went to get some Tylenol. And as you remember, they said Advil is really bad. It's going to spread the virus even more in your body, which was not true. Because Advil is actually anti-inflammatory. But they made all the wrong assumptions, whether on purpose or not. We're not going to talk about that. I went to get Tylenol, and there was nothing on the shelves. And the lady looks at me. She goes, can you believe this? I go, actually, I can't. I can. I was born in the Soviet Union. She goes, oh, so you're used to this shit. I mean, she couldn't hold back. She just went out and said that. And I was like, yep, I've seen this.
That's funny. Jake, that book still available? Can people still get your book?
Yes, it's available on Amazon, and people can probably find it in other places. But if they type Aftertastes and Tales from Russia, and they will be able to find a copy on Amazon.
Diane, okay. Can you even imagine what that had to be like? The culture shock coming from the Soviet Union when it was the Soviet Union and winding up in America. I mean, well, the difference is night and day, right?
Well, it's actually, funny. I can. Not from my side of the family, but from my husband's side of the family. When his aunt and uncle came from Cuba to visit the United States and saw an American supermarket for the first time, it was like they were in a toy store. They had never seen so many aisles stocked full of so many products. And when they saw a microwave, it was like, oh my God, what is this? You're cooking food in a matter of minutes. So in a way, I understand what you're saying, but there's another side to the story. Lately, American supermarkets are not so well stocked anymore, are they?
Yeah, well, where we live, thankfully, there is no big problem. I mean, some items, you know, are not being delivered, but, you know, we can always go around that. But I've seen some people post incredible, sad things, to say the least.
Yeah, it is happening in this country because of bad economic policies by this administration. So what happened in the Soviet Union, what happened in Cuba, it will never get to that point here. But we're seeing a little of what it really is like, and maybe it'll wake some people up.
You know, thanks to COVID-19, for the last couple of years in this country, we've had the same problem with toilet paper that Brezhnev had.
That's true.
in Russia, it was a funny joke. We remember Moscow and the Hudson when they juggled toilet paper?
Oh, yeah.
In the movie.
Yeah.
So we had a different joke because it was so hard to get toilet paper. We said, first you read it, then you use it. Use it twice.
Well, but that's all Pravda was good for back then.
Pretty much.
You know, it's kind of like the New York Times now.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it's interesting. A friend of mine made a joke. He goes, I only watch Russian news now. I go, why? He goes, because I know at least they're lying to me. In American news, they pretend to tell you the truth.
You know what? It's very sad that it has actually come to that.
Yeah.
But it's truth.
It is truth. It is true. Sad truth. I mean, we can laugh, but in reality, it's sad. I mean, if I start to look back and say where we came from, where my family came from, and what's going on in this amazing country, let me just tell you guys that this country, some people say, well, America this, America that. We chose this country.
Right.
Russian born. I'm saying Russian, I mean Soviet Union born, who came here. There is a reason why 85% of them, or maybe more, are Republican. Because we didn't like the policies, even in the 80s and the 90s, we didn't like the policies of encouraging people not to work, of creating an underclass. Because we lived it. We lived it firsthand. When people tell me, I don't understand what people go through in certain neighborhoods, certain minorities. No, I do. I do. I lived it. I lived it firsthand. I was actually firsthand experiencing this type of life. And people talk about it like they've been through trauma, they've been through this, they've been through hardships. Sure, some people have, but everybody has an opportunity here. Everybody has if they have a will, they can succeed.
Right. Right. Instead of having their hands out expecting things.
Exactly. We had our hand out because we had no choice. We didn't have a handout. Government told us, this is what you get. Everything was free. Everything was free, but you be careful what you pay for.
True.
You know, we've got about 5 minutes left on the show, and Jake Danishevsky is our special guest tonight. And in these last few minutes, Jake, if you look at the direction the United States is going today, how close do you think we are to becoming what you and your family left in 1979?
If we keep going in this direction, if we keep going in this decline of basically destroying the fibers of this nation, truly making this nation like it's the most evil nation in the world, where we're not. And people immigrate to this nation, not the other way around. I don't see too many people immigrating to Venezuela or even Ukraine or Russia right now at the moment. So this nation actually has something, and people don't realize it, but they come here and they start complaining and expecting something. The only thing we expected is for me to be able to go to school, for me to be able to succeed and have an opportunity. That's all we expected. We didn't want government to do anything more for us. And unfortunately, people don't get it. So if people keep going in that direction where they say this is an evil country. We have to take from everybody who succeeds. We're looking at the very, very fast decline if we don't change the course. And I don't want to even believe that yet, but it looks very sad to me.
Wow.
Tough too.
Jake, has anybody ever tried to pull the "you've got white privilege" card on you?
Absolutely. I've been called every name in the book. I was called anti-Semite even. And I'm Jewish.
Oh, my God. I just can't imagine somebody not knowing your background and say, well, you've got white privilege. And you come back and say, well, you should have seen me when I was 12 or 13. You know, I mean, that's the big fallacy in this. They think just because your skin is a certain color, you've got all the privilege in the world. Well, you came from a part of the world at a time in the world when nobody in your part of the world, your original part of the world, had any kind of privilege whatsoever.
First of all, nobody had privilege. Second of all, we were considered second-rate citizens because anywhere, in school, at work, they remind you that you're Jewish. They almost intentionally remind you. And I'm not talking about other kids or even adults. I'm talking about officials, like a school teacher or a school principal or a school official. I mean, we're talking about kids. I mean, I would be in a fight in the third grade. Third grade is what, a 10-year-old?
Yeah.
In a fight with another kid. And the teacher would smack both of us, but she would call me a dirty Jew.
You see?
So they literally remind you of that. So if somebody says racism, prejudice, you don't know what it's like. I mean, yes, maybe some cases, there's always somebody who's prejudiced against somebody. Everybody has some form of prejudice, but we try not to be. But systematic racism, people don't know what they're talking about.
Well, I mean, you go through a few rounds of that when you're in the third grade. It's no wonder you turned out to be an anti-Semite.
I hate myself. I've been called racist because I don't understand how people live. You know, they don't have any opportunity. They were born in the terrible households. Everything. Yes, my family was not terrible. My family was great. I love the way my parents did things. But I was born in a society where, besides everybody having hardships, I was getting the beating because I was Jewish on a daily basis. And nobody can even imagine that this day and age. Nobody can even tell me that they lived it firsthand. Nobody.
It's amazing. It's an amazing story. Tell everybody the name of the book again.
The book is called Aftertastes and Tales from Russia. And there's a subline. It's called Forgive Me for Being Anti-Social ..
See, I love it. Folks, I'll tell you want a great read. You want to find out why this is the greatest country on earth. You need to read Jake's book.
Thanks, Craig. Thank you.
Diane, we've plumb run out of time. This has been the fastest show we've done in a long time, Jake. And I mean, that's just because the conversation's so good.
Thank you. And I enjoyed myself. I really enjoyed being on your show. Last time I was here, I believe it was 6 years ago. So we definitely had a lot to talk about.
Well, and it was good to hear truth that we're not getting here.
Thank you.
Well, Diane, you're absolutely right.
Thank you. I get bits and pieces. I get most of the news by talking to somebody. But in reality, I mean, the observations we all made are on the same page.
Well, it's great to hear, and we thank you for your time tonight. And I know we've been holding you up from having dinner, and we're sorry for that. We just wish we were there to have dinner with you.
Me too. No apology necessary. I absolutely enjoyed it. Thank you so much, both of you.
Well, and
thank you.
Thank your wife for letting us bend your ear for a full hour tonight. That was awful nice that she put everything on hold for that.
She's listening to the show right now, and I'm sure she's grateful for you guys to have me on the show.
Well, you married up, I'll tell you that.
I definitely did. I definitely did. No argument there.
Diane, we've run out.
Thanks, Jake. And you know what? As this situation continues to go on, maybe you should come back in March after the diplomats solve all the problems and Biden has big egg on his face.
And can we tell all the hysteria-driven people, whether they're right or left, doesn't matter, who are screaming, oh my God, Ukrainians will die, Ukrainians will die. Can we tell them we told you so?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll have you back. We'll have you back in March to talk about it again.
Yes. Sounds great. I'm looking forward to another writing.
Diane, we're out of time.
Okay, and with that, I'll say nighty-night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you on Tuesday.
Good night.
Good night.